We will call case number 3, Balanowski versus GMRI Incorporated. Hello, Mr. Neff.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Eric Neff, and I'm here on behalf of Elaine Balanowski, Joseph Balanowski, and Brian Balanowski, who are the plaintiffs in this cause of action. A brief synopsis of the underlying case before the dismissal by the District Court of Indiana is simply that the plaintiffs were attending lunch after attending church at the Suburban Bible School in October of 1990, when Brian Balanowski was 6 years old. He and his brother went to a bathroom. The door on the bathroom malfunctioned. There was a hinge, a hydraulic hinge, that was to allow the door to close slowly. It slammed on his finger, and ever since then, he is continuing to have surgeries on his hand. The statute of limitations, as you all are aware, is 2 years after he turns 18. A lawsuit was filed on his behalf on March 30th of 2004. It was removed to federal court on April 28th of 2004.
So there was no problem with the statute of limitations?
No, there was not. No, there was not. The problem developed during the discovery process with the court and opposing counsel, law firm, and the attorneys who were representing Mr. Balanowski at the time. I guess where we need to jump into is what is required of an attorney as to responding to the defendants, in this particular case, discovery requests. And I'd like to draw the court's attention to the case of Ball versus the City of Chicago. And in Ball, that case established the principle that there should be an explicit warning in every case prior to a dismissal. In this particular case, there was no explicit warning with respect to the issue before the court on the answers to interrogatories. The only explicit warning that was given by the court had to do with the failure to establish a privilege log or a reason for privilege of the file of an Illinois attorney by the name of Winterhoff that Mr. Sendak had in his possession.
Mr. Neff,
yes.
Was a privilege log ever produced?
No, it was not.
So they now...
The entire file was produced on February 11th, 2004.
So there were never any privilege documents that were withheld?
None.
And now, how about the medical records release? Was that ever produced?
Yeah, all discovery was completed prior to the dismissal by the court. And there's a reason for that. First of all, on February 11th, well, if I could back up a little bit, the district court, Magistrate Radovich, entered an order on February 7th that said the plaintiffs have waived their privilege, that the plaintiffs are ordered to produce the complete Winterhoff file, as well as the authorizations compelled by this court on November 11th, and that the plaintiffs are warned that the failure to produce the file will result in dismissal with prejudice.
So, in other words, they never withheld part of the Winterhoff file saying it was privileged?
No. There was a file turned over to, I think, Attorney Swan, who is here today on behalf of the defendant in this cause of action. There was a settlement demand package that contained parts of the Winterhoff file. However, that settlement package never disclosed what parts were the Winterhoff file and what parts were Attorney Sendak's file. The court ordered that that whole file be turned over to the defendants by November 11th. On February 7th, ordered that to produce the file, and that was produced within 4 days of that court's order on February 11th. I met with Amanda Jones, because I had entered my appearance at that time, or Amanda Clark, and had given her everything that Mr. Sendak had.
Can just straighten something out for me. Did this case just kind of come in out of left field 14 years after this incident at Red Lobster, or was there a lot of contact between plaintiff's attorneys and attorneys for Red Lobster during the time when the statute of limitations was being
I think
told?
There was attempts to settle the case between Mr. Winterhoff, who was the plaintiff's previous attorney, and Red Lobster. There were notes in the file as to the things that needed to be done. However, I will admit, looking at the file, not much had happened in that time period.
And that's pretty unusual, isn't it?
In my practice,
so
it would be.
As a minor, you can have a minor settlement.
If I am not mistaken, yes, you can. One of the things, though, that was happening was the child was ongoing with his treatment and medical care. And it's till this day, as far as I know. I think he was last seen in November of 2003.
What was the injury he said?
He slammed his finger in the door, but it's taken multiple surgeries. There is some permanency. There's going to be future medical bills. And it is, the pictures are rather grotesque. Those things were all obtained by Attorney Winterhoff.
And there was an exchange of all that information?
When Mr. Sendak filed the lawsuit, because my understanding is Attorney Winterhoff was not licensed in Indiana, he turned the case over to Attorney Sendak. He filed the lawsuit. There was a pretrial conference in August where Mr. Sendak had indicated that he would get to the defendant's attorney the entire Winterhoff file.
See, the record, and maybe this is not entirely accurate summary, but it looks like about a half a dozen discovery motions were not responded to, and there were court orders to produce that were not followed through on, letters, a host of letters. And I'm trying to figure out what was going on in the 14 years even before this lawsuit was filed.
Well, I think that the plaintiffs and Mr. Winterhoff are related somehow. I'm not saying that that's an excuse, but sometimes when it's a family person, perhaps there was discussions on whether they were even going to bring the lawsuit or not. It would have been preferable to have the lawsuit filed to preserve the evidence at the time, but it was not done. But it still does not take away from the fact that my understanding there was only one order to compel, and that was issued December 2nd of 2004. And there was no mention of any sanctions at that time. The second one was February 7th, and the only sanction warning of dismissal had to deal with the Winterhoff file being produced, which was produced within 4 days. And there were sanctions imposed of $3,000 on February 23rd, and essentially the case got dismissed on March 4th, even though it took till April 18th to get the order. And the other thing I would like to draw the court's attention to was that the defendants themselves had requested on January 25th an extension for all the discovery deadlines, which was granted by the court on January 31st, and the court indicated at that time that it would be discussed at a hearing on April 1st. And by April 1st, the defendant had everything they had asked for. And then the court, on its own motion, for whatever reason, discontinued the telephone conference on April 1st and issued its order April 18th, which wasn't even enough time to give the monetary sanctions. And there's no evidence that the plaintiffs in any way, especially Brian Balanowski, because all of his interrogatories were filed timely. And I'm using up my rebuttal time, and I'll rest.
Mr. Swan. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. May it please the court, Mr. Neff.
Does Mr. Neff have it right?
Some of it. The fact that the defendants got everything they asked for is not correct, or that we wouldn't be here today. There are actually five areas of discovery that we were looking for and five areas of dispute, which prompted the six motions in this matter. And one was the Winterhoff file. One was correcting the caption to name GMRI as the proper defendant. One was getting Brian Balanowski's full and complete and accurate discovery responses. Same thing with the set of interrogatories and requests for productions to the parents, Elaine and Joseph Balanowski. And last but not least is authorizations. You have to understand, as was brought up a little earlier, we get this assignment on an accident in 1990. The young man was 6 years old. And you talk about a trail being cold. Red Lobster knew nothing about this. Nothing had happened as far as Red Lobster or the defendant knows in the 14 and a half years before a suit was filed. So we were scrambling to get information, to get enough documents, enough information to evaluate this case, both for liability and for damages.
Was there any knowledge contemporaneous with the accident to Red Lobster?
It was reported to us, and I don't have any reason to believe not to, that it was reported to the manager of the restaurant when it happened that Sunday morning. That there was a, I don't know if it was a report file, but at least it was told to the manager. Problem is, 14 years later, no manager. So, again, we're scrambling for information. And part of the problem I think that you're having and Mr. Neff is having is why nothing was done is that the Balanowskis moved, and I'm not sure when, but quite a few years ago, out west. And I think that was one of the problems in the communication with Mr. Winterhoff and whatever else happened. So we've got a two-tier problem as far as the defense goes. What were the injuries at the time? What are the injuries now? And what happened in the middle? The medical treatment at the time was in Indiana. We found out who the medical providers were. We tried to get the records. They'd all been expunged. We couldn't get any. To find out what was the current problem, and plaintiff's attorneys were telling us he still has problems, he's still having surgery, he has permanent injury, all the medical treatment was out west, either in California or Nevada. Well, of course, we have no subpoena power out there, so we sent medical authorizations, as we normally do, with the interrogatories and the requests for production. Never, to this day, have we received a signed authorization, either by Brian, who is now an adult, or by his parents, who would have signed for him while he was a minor. So we can't say that we've received everything we asked for. We still have not gotten the authorizations. I have no clue what the young man's condition is now.
How many warnings, in your view, did the court give?
In writing, one.
Orally?
Orally, I don't know of any. The interesting part is we didn't have hearings on these motions. We didn't have hearing on these motions because the plaintiff never responded to any of our six motions. So the court, by local rule, just ruled on them. There was no hearing set because it was not a contest. So there, as far as I know, there were no oral warnings. Now, when we filed our different motions, we asked for, as part of the relief, dismissal. Now, if you consider that a warning, I don't know. But as far as the court ordering or issuing a warning, just one.
In your view, does that fit within the parameters of Ball? A case I'm violently interested in since it was mine in the district court?
Certainly. I mean, it's there in black and white. How do you get around it? I mean, the bells go off, the lights flash when something like that happens. And yet, even after that warning, there was no response to any of our discovery motions. And we don't understand it from our end. The court, in its order of April 18, 05, which dismissed the case, said, in light of the plaintiff's nearly complete failure to comply with discovery deadlines, comply with this court's orders, or prosecute this case, the court sees no reason why reconsideration of the February 23, 2005 order should be given, or why dismissal should not now be granted against the plaintiffs. I mean, this is just a series over a year of total disregard of the court's orders and the normal flow of discovery. As early as April 30, and that's found on page 36 of the record, is an exhibit to our first motion for discovery, motion to compel. I wrote a letter to the plaintiff's attorney saying, here is our request for production third party that we do, according, this is while it was still in the state court before it was removed. We want the Winterhoff file. April 30, we put them on notice, and the...
Would
what
you
we got
say
was in
that
February.
The Bolin, forgive me, I'm sorry.
No, pardon me.
Would you say that the Bolinowskis have partially complied with discovery orders, never complied with discovery? What realm are we in here?
Brian Bolinowski gave us answers to interrogatories and requests for production. In our opinion, they were not complete. They were not fully answered and did not provide the authorizations. So we have something from him. Parents, Joseph and Elaine, gave us nothing. It took until February, 10 months, to get the Winterhoff file. And it was the trial court's decision that enough is enough. This case is not moving. And it set deadlines. Counsel mentioned that we asked for an extension of time for discovery. We had to. We can't take depositions until we get the documents. We haven't been able to get the documents. We had to file a motion for extension of time just because nothing was being done, no responses were made.
Maybe I wasn't really listening as carefully as I should have just now, but have the Bolinowskis partially complied with discovery orders?
Yes, ma'am.
They have?
Yes, ma'am.
Have they withheld part of the Winterhoff file as privileged?
Originally, and this is orally, with somebody else in my office, I was not involved. It's my understanding the response was to our many requests, telephone calls, letters, motions for production, that you're only going to get what's not privileged. And that's why we went into all this, okay, fine. If it's privileged, it's privileged. Just let us know what's privileged. Set out the privilege log. The court went along with this. Give us the privilege log. The court will examine it. Well, absolutely no response from the plaintiffs.
So there never was a privilege log.
That's right. Because there was never a response from the plaintiffs saying yes, no, or whatever. So that's why the court found on February 7 that they have waived any privilege because they did not produce the privilege log. And after that, shortly after that, as Mr. Neff told you, they tell us that they produced all of the contents of the Winterhoff file.
But would you say today that the discovery with respect to Brian is complete?
No, ma'am.
No.
The interrogatory answers are not complete, and we have no medical records from when past age 9. So I have no idea what the present condition is. But the authority cited in our brief say the district court's decision to sanction a plaintiff by dismissal is reviewed for an abuse of discretion. And this court has noted that the abuse of discretion standard means something more than its belief that it would have acted differently if placed in the circumstances confronting the district judge. This court has noted that to disagree with the district court's decision and to find that the court abused its discretion are two fundamentally different things. The district court's decision must strike us as fundamentally wrong for an abuse of discretion to occur. Does the red light mean I'm done?
It does.
Thank you very much.
Very briefly, in rebuttal, I would also like to draw the court's attention to Rice versus the City of Chicago, which is cited in our materials. And the court's supposed to favor a hearing on the merits. And one of the problems with this case, I got involved on February 1st, was when I entered my appearance. I'd had discussions with previous defense counsel. We sat down. I gave them the entire file. There was a hearing set to talk about the...
But it sounds like the entire file is not the entire file, doesn't it?
I not only gave him the Winterhoff file, I gave him everything in our file to comply with the discovery request. And I don't think it's a correct assessment of the facts. All the authorizations were sent to them on March 17th and again on March 30th. The reason there were two dates was on March 17th, I had received unsigned or unnotarized documents. They all were sent back. I sent the unnotarized ones to opposing counsel. Then again on March 30th, I delivered the rest.
But all of those items were due months and months and months earlier.
But if you look at the cases that are cited by both the defense and myself, they're much more egregious than this. There were two or three warnings that were explicit.
Well, that doesn't matter. This is an abuse of discretion standard of review.
Well, we're supposed to be concerned about justice, and these are discovery disputes that go on all the time.
But that's not a basis for a reviewing court to overturn a discretionary decision.
Well, it is if they don't meet the standards of Ball and Rice. There was never an explicit warning that there was going to be a dismissal for failure to answer interrogatory.
I thought it's undisputed there was a written warning.
To what? On what issue?
That the case would be dismissed if the, I think it was the privilege log.
Correct.
Wasn't produced. So
why is that Winterhoff file. The Winterhoff file was produced.
Late.
Plus, if you look at the timeliness, the sanctions, the monetary sanctions, are we going to punish plaintiffs who did nothing wrong in this particular case?
Well, the plaintiffs are responsible for the conduct of the attorney
well,
whom they
case,
hired.
Case law does indicate, you know, that you should sanction the attorneys first, that dismissal should not be, it should be used as last resort. It was not used as a last resort. The monetary sanctions were imposed on February 23rd. Would they even get 9 days to see if they'd work? I don't think that's reasonable. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.